All right, Chad, are you with us?
I'm with you, Amir. How you going?
Good, mate. How are you?
Good, good.
All right, let's get straight into it as we do with all of our podcasts. I am Amir Fazeli, and today we have a special guest, my friend, Big Chad, Mr. Chad Lucini. So, Chad is going to be joining us on probably all of the Thick Stoic podcasts, if not all, then at least most, because Chad is a regular. He's been around the Stoic block. He knows a thing or 10 about a lot of the stuff. So I need somebody to be able to bounce ideas off of, and he's the perfect person to do exactly that. So what we're going to do is we're going to give some structure to these episodes. And in doing so, we're going to go through different texts and just readings, break those readings down. Because when those readings aren't broken down, a lot of times they're written in sort of, I guess, for lack of a better word, hard to understand or even boring English, which turns people away from reading them. But that's a shame because there's filled with so much information and so much can be taken away from them, even in very short readings or letters. So what we're going to do is we're going to start today's one with some of Seneca's letters. So before we get into it, Chad, do you want to explain to everybody who Seneca was and also a little bit about your own experience with Stoic philosophy, your history with it, so everybody gets acquainted with you a little bit more?
Sure. First off, my acquaintances with Stoicism was not just generally Stoicism itself. It was more or less just getting a little bit more of an understanding on the overall picture of philosophy. At a young age, I'd say about a decade and a half or so ago, I started a bit of a journey on trying to figure out, as everybody would. Trying to figure out who they are and things like that. And I stumbled upon a few of my what I call my favorite philosophers, which I learned a thing or two from, and I tried to sort of apply their philosophy into my life. And basically Seneca and Marcus Aurelius were primarily one of those philosophers, which basically inspired me in to pursue the road of Stoicism itself. I'm not gonna basically say that I'm 100% Stoicist, but the majority of the philosophies that I do agree with are more or less based from this, revolve around Stoicism itself. And the thing is, one of the things that I've learned from my life is that you can read a lot about this sort of stuff, and philosophy really the general, if you want to say the definition of philosophy in people's lives is really how to find happiness in your life. And as simple as a question that is, it's actually a very deep and loaded question, and whoever you ask, you can see that people struggle to really figure out what that really means. And that is really, really interesting to me whenever I kind of even ask myself the question today, like, what does make me happy? There's a lot of things that basically pop up that require me to look into on a deeper level, whether it's philosophy, through the philosophy road or other means. And what I've really wanted to do was not just read about the philosophy and understand what a quote means and all that sort of stuff, but I wanted to actually be a practitioner of these of the definitions and the actual philosophies or the actual reading letters and readings and things like that that other great philosophers have come up with. There's, I mean, we're looking at Seneca and we're looking at Marcus Aurelius, for example, or Epicurus, for example, or whatever. These are ancient philosophers that have stood the, you know, the test of time, but there are actually modern philosophers that actually do great, that do have their own philosophies as well, that do make a lot of sense. So the practical aspect of the whole Stoicism is very interesting to me. And what are the, you know, the, what are the things that you need to do to keep reminding yourself of, you know, of these great, say meditations and letters and things like that, to keep sort of your life on track and to be able to you know, control your life in the way that, you know, control the things that are controllable in your life as such. So this is where Seneca comes into play, because out of a lot of the philosophers, Seneca basically wrote a whole bunch of letters to different people, for example, and practically in his letters, he had a lot sort of exercises, if you like, or practical things that can be done, you know, to sort of allow you to ground yourself to a natural level, which is basically what Stoicism is all about, right? Just to get down to as a natural level, or to close to nature as possible, and to be able to control the things that are controllable in your life. And this is where Seneca, you know, rings true in a lot of his letters. So Seneca himself, I mean, he was I believe he was a senate in the era of Nero. And I mean, he's had a pretty hard life, other than him being a practically a sick person for most of his life. He was, you know, put into a lot of positions and a lot of situations where he didn't want to be in, and where he begged not to be in. But yet, you know, he was forced to be in them. And basically the one that got him to a lot of trouble was when he had to be the tutor of Nero's son, I think 10-year-old son, if I'm not mistaken there. And this is where things actually went wrong for him. He was you know, he got himself in trouble a few times. I mean, as much as he's a great philosopher and his reading are really, really good, especially for people who are studying Stoicism, a lot of the times he didn't maybe practice his own messages in a lot of situations. However, I mean, it doesn't matter what people say in the controversies and you know, the hypocrisies and things that, you know, a lot of people tend to sort of talk about as Seneca, he still comes across as one of the best Stoic writers that shouldn't be ignored. I mean, one of the biggest notes is when he actually ended his life, you know, when Nero basically sent one of his soldiers or centurion or whatever they call them, and he basically asked him, oh, well, you got to kill yourself right now. And he was just like, okay, I got to kill myself, and here it is. And while everybody around him was crying and things like that, he was actually ready to die. And he actually tried to kill himself three times before he died because of his illnesses and things like that. So he left behind, I think, about 124 letters, which are still circulating today, and they ring very true to a lot of people. And what, as you mentioned earlier, we want to try to sort of go through most of his letters if we can. And a lot of them are actually written for his time, but can be interpreted or can be converted into our time as well. Today's letter, I think the one that we're going to cover, is called On Discursiveness in Reading. And it really does ring true for you know, today's...
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
What do you call it? Today's frustration in a lot of... sort of the news outlets and information, and the whole technology, the internet and things like that. So, yeah, this is going to be a really, really, really cool letter to go through.
All right, let's get straight into it. So as you said, as you gave the introduction, this is the second letter of Seneca, On Discursiveness in Reading. So we're going to read it bit by bit. And we're going to stop intermittently for those of you listening and actually go through those parts. So if as we're reading and you're like, what does that mean? Don't worry, we're going to stop and actually go through things and talk about how it applies to life today. as Chad said, this particular letter is one of the ones that has a lot of application still to what's happening today. So, judging by what you write me and by what I hear, I am forming a good opinion regarding your future. You do not run hither and thither and distract yourself by changing your abode, for such restlessness is the sign of a disordered spirit. The primary indication, to my thinking, of a well-ordered mind is a man's ability to remain in one place and linger in his own company. So that's like the first paragraph, basically. And what he's saying is, he's talking about what this letter in general is talking about is the fact that people keep themselves or get themselves distracted by focusing on different things, by not finishing tasks, by not sticking to one thing before going on to something else. And they're always running back and forth. They're going here and there, and they're distracting themselves by being restless, by being disordered. And he's saying that a well-ordered mind of a man is shown by his ability to be able to stay in one place, not just physically, like he's saying, to remain in one place and linger in his own company. So he does mean that quite literally, in the sense of being by yourself and being happy to be by yourself, not needing to be to have other people around. And if you're listening and you're like me, you're like, man, that's the perfect thing. I would love to just be by myself all the time, nobody around. But not everybody is like that. And not everybody is, I mean, a lot of people naturally, first of all, extroverts, they need to be around other people. They need to be sort of going from here to there. But some people can remain by themselves and be with their thoughts. And that's a sign of strength in a lot of ways. It's a good sign. But also in a less literal sense of not necessarily remaining in one physical place, but remaining in one physical task, one thought, one objective, and sort of getting that out of the way and then going on to the next thing. You know, like when I was younger and I would get distracted by a lot of different things, my parents used to always tell me, there's no point you doing all these different stuff, because what you're doing is you're just digging a lot of holes all over the place. So you end up with a lot of potholes. Stick to one hole and keep digging until you strike gold, and then dig yourself another hole and stick to that. And so this is kind of what this is talking about, and where the letter's starting from, and setting the tone in that regards. Feel free to jump in anytime here, Chad, if you want to add anything.
No, it's actually good. You spot on what you said, there, Amy. It's really basically a point on allowing people to really understand what commitment is, committing to a task and just basically going the distance with the task. And I mean, once you read through the letter, as you go, and a lot of these points will become a little bit more apparent on what he's trying to say. But the distraction, if I was to convert this letter and I was to basically write it to John or Mary of today, and basically tell them, oh, look, you are being very much distracted with the whole, as an example, the distraction of social media is a thing that is common for a lot of people, which is good and bad at the same time, right? Like, I'm a big advocate of social media because it's got a lot of good stuff about it, but also, same as everything else, you know, dosage is the poison is the dosage, right? It's if you have too much of a good thing, it becomes bad for you. So the thing of today, especially the this age of the young generation, is that they're very scared of being by themselves. They're very scared of actually of being bored. You don't allow yourself to be bored. You don't allow yourself to basically get into your natural state of actually thinking and getting a little bit more creative. Now, albeit not everybody's born to be creative, you know, not everybody wants to be creative. A lot of people are content on waking up in the morning and the first thing they want to see is their, you know, their Instagram likes and feeds or whatever.
Exactly.
So this is where this first passage of this letter rings true to me, at least, in regards to, you know what, just you need to allow yourself to the only way you can allow yourself to order your mind, to put things in order in your mind and to really become logical in your thinking is by stepping back, letting all the distraction go away, letting all the noise go away, and learning how to do that. I mean, we need to try to relearn how to do that in this day and age because of everything. You can't get bored these days. You get bored, you pick up your phone. You can do a whole lot of things on your phone for, you know, 12 hours a day without even leaving sight of it. Do you know what I mean? And then once you finish your phone, okay, I can watch TV now. Or I can get on my laptop and play games and do whatever I want to do. And you're not allowing your brain just to take that break. Do you know what I mean? It's like brain fasting, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, 100%. This message is much more applicable today with everything, all kinds of distractions, all kinds of information coming in from all directions. You know, it's making people struggle to hit their goals. It's making people struggle to move ahead. And all it's really doing is for the majority of the people, not for everybody, but for the majority of people who can't sort of see through the matrix, so to speak, just stay mediocre, you know, not be able to focus on things that you know, not be able to say no to things that you need to say no to so that you can do other things because there's so much distraction and because you are can easily get caught up, even with the intention of being productive, by the way. I'm not talking about being distracted by social media and fun things and meaningless things, even by things that seem to be meaningful, which we're actually about to get into. The letter gets into itself. So, second paragraph. Be careful, however, lest this reading of many authors and books of every sort may tend to make you discursive and unsteady. You must linger among a limited number of master thinkers and digest their works. If you would derive ideas which shall win firm hold in your mind. Everywhere means nowhere. When a person spends all his time in foreign travel, he ends by having many acquaintances but no friends. And the same thing must hold true of men who seek intimate acquaintance with no single author, but visit them all in a hasty and hurried manner. So this one's a good one, this part here. And again, this part is figurative as much as it is literal, or literal as much as it is figurative. Now, you know, how many times do you see some business guru ad come up on Facebook or Instagram, and they're always like, "I read a book a day. How to read a book a day, a book a week, 7 books a week. I plan to read 5,000 books this year," or something like that. And the issue is, there's nothing really. Not only is there nothing impressive about that, the thing is, how much of that are you actually going to absorb? And it's because of this lack of commitment, which is what the letter starts with, that you're actually falling and running into that problem. A lot of times people ask me, for example, what books should I read, or what YouTube videos or Instagram profiles should I follow if I want to increase and improve my knowledge in strength and conditioning and that sort of things. I want to get into the industry. And I always tell them the same three to four people that they should follow, and their respective YouTube channels or their respective Instagram profiles and blogs and stuff like that. Nobody else. Because as much as you want to look for as long as time that you have, as much time as you have that you can look, you're going to keep finding new people with content out there. And you will just put yourself in a place where at the end of the day, you will not be able to digest any of their works. You will not be able to internalize any of their works. You won't get anywhere. You'll just end up confusing yourself because there's different messages coming from all these different people. Instead, just find yourself a handful of people that are respected, that have a good, solid track record, and just immerse yourself in their work. People who speak in the same sort of philosophy as you do within your line of work, the same ideologies, and even different ones, that because you need to challenge your ideas on a regular basis. Not everything you know is right. Maybe there's a better way to do it, you know. But people who've got a track record, people who other people, you know, they know that they have a good solid standing. And obviously, this doesn't just apply to authors and books, like literally. It also applies to any other time where you're trying to learn things about a particular topic or a particular thing from different types of categories within your life, whatever it is that you're trying to chase. And master thinkers is the word that Seneca uses, and I think that's exactly right. The people at the top of their game, you need to go and figure them out, because success leaves clues at the end of the day. And if there are people who are master thinkers and you do identify them and you identify with their message, your gut feeling says that these guys are on the right track, this is the type of person that you wish to strive to be like, learn from, then all you need to do is just immerse yourself in what they have to tell you and those types of topics and those types of people, because only that way you can really start to actually internalize anything and become more intimate with those types of learnings and teachings. Anything to add there, Chad?
Oh, yeah. This is a really, really good one here. But we need to kind of like remind ourselves a little bit that this is a letter that was written a very long time ago, right? What used to be available to people in those days and what is available to people right now, obviously is a little bit different. I mean, there's a lot of similarities in the struggles, right? We tend to forget that, you know, people in those days had similar mental issues as what we probably have today. That's kind of like a lot given in so many cases. But for example, like in today's age, marketing is very, very powerful, right? And we are presented with a lot of really good tools to allow us to market ourselves, right? So anybody in today's age can actually market themselves to be a guru. Whether you are or not, that's beside the point now, right? I would assume only at this stage that back in those days, probably you had something pretty similar where there's a lot of, you know, writers or thinkers or whatever who weren't masters in their craft, but they were still somehow sort of given out or marketing themselves and trying to make some sort of attention to themselves based on what they're trying to sell, right? So this paragraph comes across to me from Seneca as, you know, just be careful on who you're getting that advice from, right? This is one thing. So there's two parts to it. One is be careful who you're getting that advice from, okay? Because like you said, Amir, that, you know, a lot of the times you could actually most likely you could distract yourself. You could get yourself confuse yourself as you said it, right? But it's also very much related to the first paragraph, which is the distraction side of it. Think about it from this point of view. Say, for example, you're trying to learn about a particular diet, say, right? And then you get onto YouTube and you find a couple of people, you know, that have got a lot of views or a lot of hits or a lot of stars or whatever it might be in that case, right? And you take their advice and you'd be like, oh, wow, okay, yeah, that makes a lot of sense because they bring forward a lot of science behind it, right? And you look at, you know, you tend to agree with a lot of their points and you become a practitioner of that particular diet. And I'm only using diet as an example here, right? So I don't let's not confuse this. But then as you are surfing the net, you realize that there's other people who are actually promoting this particular diet, right? And you'd be like, oh, okay. But then again, they've got their own views on it. And then you get other people who are actually promoting another diet by calling this diet rubbish. And this is when the confusion begins, right? It's like, oh shit, what, who am I supposed to follow? But this person is saying that this is true, but this person is saying that that's not true because of a whole lot of reasons. And this is where the confusion begins. And instead of you actually trying that diet yourself by focusing on that one person, listening to that one person, and you making the judgment on your own to say that, yep, this is actually pretty good and this is how I'm feeling, and or this is actually pretty rubbish. I've tried it for them for a month and nothing happened. You know what I mean? This is where kind of like I see a lot of his point is, and especially these days, like you know what, you don't have to read books anymore. You can listen to books, you can listen to podcasts, you can read small articles, a whole lot of small articles that tell you a bigger story, you know? So that whole idea of not being distracted by a lot of voices that could, you know, that are trying to say the same thing, but it could be you interpreting each voice differently, or it could be different voices of people who don't really know much about the subject, but they just want to make their voice heard. Do you know what I mean? So this is where the thought behind what he's trying to say is that just focus on what you're trying to do with the one or two authors that you really think they're really good and go with it, right? And then see where that takes you. If in X amount of time you realize that, you know what, this is actually rubbish, you by yourself, if they're not really genuine, you by yourself will be able to figure out at some point that, you know what, this is not working for me. So I guess I've used the whole diet example here because in our day and age, this seems to be like every 2 days, there seems to be a diet fad that comes out there. And, you know, it's a little bit funny these days.
Well, speaking of food and diet, third paragraph goes into
Exactly.
food does no good and is not assimilated into the body if it leaves the stomach as soon as it is eaten. Nothing hinders a cure so much as frequent change of medicine. No wound will heal when one salve is tried after another. A plant which is often moved can never grow strong. There is nothing so efficacious. Did I pronounce that right? Efficacious that it can be helpful while it is being shifted about, and in reading of many books is distraction. So forget about books for a while. Let's just think about the actual message here. And this applies to everything, like with people who train. How often do people train, who train, change their training program? How many people do you know that change their training program every 3 weeks because 2 weeks in, they didn't get the results they wanted?
The
They
quick
tested,
results, the quick results.
they passed here, they tested the deadlift, they tested their squat, and it didn't go up 15 kilos after 2 weeks, and they're disappointed. So they start digging another one of those holes, one of those other potholes. And so after a year passes, they've just got a whole bunch of potholes that nothing, no, they didn't stick to anything. If they had just done a less than perfect program, if they had taken less than perfect action in anything, not just training, in anything, then that quote unquote food would have had some time to digest in the stomach, and they would have been able to extract some kind of a value out of that time. You know, so many times I come across people who are like, okay, I've been training for a year, and then you have a look at their actual training history. They've changed programs everywhere. They didn't stick to things because they thought they're gonna train 5 days a week. Then they thought, okay, I'll do 3 days a week. Then they'll go 4 days a week. If they had just started with just even twice a week, for an entire year with just doing, I don't know, just squats, for example, or less than perfect everything, they would have gotten somewhere more than where they are now. And it's this idea, this constant distraction that people are facing, and it's just going to get worse. And it's because of the constant influx of information, constant influx of, like you said, the ease of people posing as gurus. We don't know whether they are or not, but certainly you can say that. And so you get no result at the end of it all. Nothing grows strong. As he says, a plant which is often moved can never grow strong. Can't grow its roots into the ground. It can't get a chance to absorb all the nutrients from the soil. And this shifting about, this moving around, this not focusing on one task, one thing. And it's not about perfect execution at all. I think that's a very important part of this message. It's about just sticking to something. Forget about perfect execution. Just worry about execution. There's a one-liner that's going around now. Done is the new perfect. And that's absolutely correct. Done is the new perfect. You don't need to do it perfectly anymore. You just need to get it done. And as you're getting it done, if you realize that it needs to be better, the quality needs to change in some way, then you can change course. You can make corrections as you're doing it. But at least you're on a momentum now. What you're doing is on wheels and it's moving forward. And I think that's the most important thing out of all of this. And it finishes the paragraph by saying, accordingly, since you cannot read all the books which you may possess, it is enough to possess only as many books as you can read. Got anything to add on that one, Chad?
Yes. A couple of good points you put up there, Amir. One of the first point is, before I jump into this, I just want to say, there's no disrespect to those who want to be gurus out there. There's a lot of guys and girls who are out there actually, and they do these things where they talk about what they know based on what they know right now as part of their journey. And I actually love that.
There's plenty of legit gurus out there. Absolutely.
Not necessarily gurus. I mean, even if they're starting, there's a lot of people that they're starting their journey and
sharing their journey.
And it's more I guess this is what we're doing right now. I mean, I'm not a master, neither are you. And we're just basically sharing our journey with people who want to follow this road. So there's no disrespect to those who want to talk about their subjects and want to, about their passion and their interest and want to journal, to keep it stoic, right? To journal their journey with everybody else. I actually do respect that a lot. It takes a lot of courage for people to do that. So keep doing it. If you want to start a journey, you want to talk about it, do it. Let your voice be heard. But going back to Seneca and what you said, the point that really strikes me with this paragraph is quick results, right? People want to have quick results. People don't seem to really let the flavor settle in before
flavor settle in. I like that that imagery there. Yes.
Yeah, so they just basically want to go. It's like you and I, Amir, we like a little bit of scotch every now and then, especially the fine stuff, right? And as you know, when you taste a new 12-year-old something that comes out on the market and you want to give it a go, you want to really savor it. You want to really taste. You want to really make sure that your palate is clear. You really want to let it linger in your mouth and really give it that time to sort of pass through your
you want to study it.
You want to study it. Yeah, you want to really let your brain wrap your brain around it. It's for you to be able to come home and say, wow, this is actually a good drop, or you know what, this is actually rubbish. So the quick result is that savoring of that flavor or what you're trying to learn, this is where a lot of people tend to fall into a lot of traps, especially today, because we have so much information. We have so many options we can get on. I mean, if you're trying to learn, if you're trying to learn, say you're trying to learn a language, right? And you want to learn it from the one person, but there's another person who's doing it, and then there's another person who's doing it, and there's another person who's doing it, and everybody's starting from scratch. You see what I mean? And you end up jumping from one to the other, from one to the other, only learning the first bits that these guys have taught you because you don't have that. You're not really savoring that particular study that is coming from that one, from the one source, right? So you end up not really getting too deep into it, and then a lot of the times you end up getting bored of it. It's like, ah, stuff it, you know, I've had enough of this, right? So really the quick results is what we really need to think about that. If this is what you're interested in, the quick results are not what you really want. I mean, if you want to put in the analogy of training, and you said it perfectly there, is that, you know, the one who's going to come in and change their program every 3 weeks, they're not going to hit the results at the end of the year. You know what I mean? And a lot of the times, you know, you're going to have, I mean, we're all humans. And, you know, say you to keep it in the analogy of training in this case, say you have someone following a program for 3 months, right? And that particular program, you know, they're starting with it. You know what? It's not really, they're not really feeling it. Mm-hmm. So small changes will work, right? Small changes will work, little tweaks here and there will work, but the program is still the backbone of that progress. But so in other words, that struggle is required for you to go through that program, right? You need to go through that little bit of pain for you to be able to go through it, to finish it. But the results at the end of that program are going to speak the loudest, right? So it's so you set the program from the beginning of the road with an intention of a particular result at the end of it, with a few tweaks in the middle, right? That flexibility is basically what's going to make it digestible to everybody. Now, for someone who basically is going to go in, start the program, and in 3 weeks say, well, you know what? I'm not feeling it. I'm not this. I'm not that. I don't want to do this program anymore, and they start doing their own thing. They can't actually blame the program. They can't blame you anymore for the program, right? Because, well, you didn't stick to it. Right, you didn't go through the hardship of it. Yes, it's hard. We could have tweaked it, but you decided to just sort of not do it anymore. So there's that long-term commitment that a lot of people tend to sort of miss these days. And it's not a fault of anybody. It's really just a disciplinary thing that people sort of have forgotten because of all the options that we've got right now. I can imagine in Seneca's times, like if you wanted to be a carpenter, right? There's only so much you can do with carpentry, but with carpentry, but it was an option. It was the only option, right?
Yeah.
But now you got, well, you can do carpentry, but you can do this specialized thing that's in carpentry. And then in the specialized thing, you've got another thing you can do. And then there's this, it's like, wow, so overwhelming. It's like going shopping and say you want to buy, you know, you just want to buy ice cream, right? And then you go and stand, you go to Coles or Woolies or whatever, wherever shopping house you go to. And then you look at the fridge and there's about 102 different types of ice creams. And you're like, oh man, it's going to be a while.
Yeah. Too many choices.
So limiting those choices, I think, limiting those choices, which is related to those quick results, you know, just limits, just narrow your vision on what you want and just go with that. Right. And don't worry too much about the quick results. Just keep dabbling with it. And you're going to have your ups and downs like everything. And whenever you have your downs, just back off a little bit, tweak it. And then when you feel, you know, hungry for it again, just go full force, right? But just stick to that one road. Stick to that one author. Stick to that one mastermind. Stick to the one diet. Stick to that one program. You know what I mean? That's the thing.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And, yeah. I mean, that covers everything in regards to that part there. On to the next chapter. But, you reply, I wish to dip first into one book and then into another. I tell you that it is the sign of an overnice appetite to toy with many dishes. For when they are manifold and varied, they cloy but do not nourish. So you should always read standard authors, and when you crave a change, fall back upon those whom you read before. Each day acquire something that will fortify you against poverty, against death, indeed against other misfortunes as well. And after you have run over many thoughts, select one to be thoroughly digested that day. This is my custom. From the many things which I have read, I claim some one part for myself. The thought for today is one which I discovered in Epicurus. For I am wont to cross over even into the enemy's camp, not as a deserter, but as a scout. So this part is obviously he's gone over back over the points that he's making, and he's addressing a common objection where he's saying, but where people may say, but I want to learn about other things. I want to learn about different things. I want to dip my toe into learning about this and learning about that and experiencing a multitude of different things. And what he's saying is a sign of an overnight appetite. So what that means is it's a sign of a fussy appetite, where you are trying to try this and you go, oh, I don't really like that, or try that, you know. And so when you're trying all these different things, you end up not having the food that you need to be having. You don't take up the information you need to take up about that particular topic, about that particular thing. You don't take in enough, and so you don't get nourished. So you should always read standard authors. And when you crave a change, go back to whom you've read from before. So go back to things that you have gone to before, that you have already dug that hole. It's not a pot anymore. It's getting deeper and deeper. Go back to that and keep digging that hole. So work on the things that you've been working on, that you know, that you're familiar with, that you've been spending time on, that you've been spending energy on. Don't let that energy go to waste by being sort of like, as he puts it, overnight or excessively fussy on that one thing, on multiple things, you know, where you want to dip your toes, so to speak, in all these different things. Pick a couple of things and just go all in on them. And typically those things have to be for the real life. Those things have to be your strengths. So a lot of people say, oh, I'm bringing up my weaknesses, and that's all well and good. But at least in the sense of, I'm just talking about, for those of you listening to this who have like certain goals, especially in terms of business and stuff like that, you need to be going in on your strengths. That's what you need to be going in all in on. And anything that you are weak in, you need to hire out, or you need to delegate out, either or. And that can also apply to people who are not starting a business, who have other things that got that they're going on and they're working on and stuff like that. You just have to adapt accordingly. But yeah, I mean, that seems to be pretty simple, pretty straightforward. What do you got to say about that, Chad?
The word that strikes me when I read this paragraph is niching, right? Niche.
Yeah.
And it's really based on from a business point of view. So say, for example, you have a company, okay? Let's look at the most successful companies in the world right now. Like look at the Apple, you look at McDonald's, you look at Google, you look at all these. They basically have the niche market. They conquered that one product, they niched it, they killed it, they made the best out of it. And once they were the masters in it, then they started dipping, you know, as you said, dipping their toes in other stuff. Like, for example, you look at Google, right? Search engine.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The best search engine. It's become Google's is an acronym now. You know, it's like, let's Google it. You know, you don't say let's whatever it, right? You don't even say let's search it. It's too hard to say search these days. You just Google it. It's easier, right? So that's their bread and butter. This is what they started with. And then after that, then they started coming up with a whole lot of other stuff, right? But they're still known for the search engine. Same with Apple. Same with McDonald's. McDonald's. I mean, it's been around for many, 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 many decades, right? And they're a burger company, right? They're not a soft drink company. They're not a soft serve company, or, you know, like ice cream company. No, they're a burger company, and that's how they're going to be. But they dip their toes on so many other things, right? So This is what strikes me from this is it's basically just keeping things, creating a very strong base for yourself, right? And then going from there. If you are somebody who is, you know, going to be the jack of all trades, that's great. You know a lot about other things, but you know a lot about a lot of things, but you are not necessarily a guru into the one thing, right? So you're not going to be able to perhaps maybe, you know, be the person that somebody would seek to ask about a particular or to get advice about a particular domain or whatever you're trying to sell in that sense. So creating a good base, a strong base for yourself will allow you to not just become successful in that and be the person or be the unit, whether it's a person or whether it's a company or whether it's a business, whatever it can be, wherever you want it to be. But it'll be that unit that people will seek to get advice of because of that specialty that they do, or they buy services of because of what they do, right? Once again, it all relates back to, you know, the first and second paragraph. It's just like, you got to commit, you got to keep at it, you got to keep going with it until you basically build that strong base. And then from that strong base, you can do whatever you want to do. And if I was to bring it back to the training analogy, since it's, you know, the podcast is stoicism, I should say, but part of it is mostly training, because we're both sort of is in our field, even though I'm just a trainer and you're my coach, really. But it's like if you really build a good core, right, mm-hmm. a strong core by doing a lot of core exercises, then you know what, deadlift is not going to be as bad for you. Squats are not going to be as bad for you for getting that strength. But then if you want to dabble a little bit with bodybuilding, hey, it's not going to be bad for you either. If you want to sort of dabble a little bit more with a little bit of strongman stuff, hey, you're still going to be able to do it because your core is strong, right? Yeah. But if your core is not strong and you want to do strongman, dude, you're going to get injured sooner or later. So it's just that persistence and the commitment of the one thing that you want to do, whatever it is in your life, whatever you're interested in, whatever you're passionate about, just keep on pursuing it until you build a really, really good base. And then once you build that good base and you become a master at it, well, not necessarily a master, but pretty good at it in the sense of, you know what, people are actually asking you for advice, and that's a good metric. Then you can start basically moving along to other things. And you mentioned something about, you know, like a lot of the times, say you're starting your own business in that case, and you're the only person who's doing it, you know, whatever the case may be. And you know, you're doing the stuff that you're good at, but there's a lot of other stuff that, you know what, you're not really that good at, and you sort of want other people to sort of do it for you. Well, fantastic. Then you can just basically hire other gurus to do that for you. Mm-hmm. Tim Ferriss has got the 4-hour week, which is actually pretty good book for that, in regards to how you can sort of manage yourself and manage your business by tapping into other people's niches, if you like. You see what I mean? And
yeah.
And if you surround yourself with a lot of people who got different niches than you, then all of a sudden you are actually connected to a pretty good network that can get things done efficiently and very, very, very well. And just one last point on this, you did mention, actually did like that, where, you know, perfectionism. Right. Perfectionism is usually a big frustrating thing for a lot of people, because if you want to have things perfect, you can never get things done on time. You know what I mean? Nothing's going to become perfect in that case. So there's a little bit of a balance between, you know, trying to get something to be as perfect as possible. What was it that you said? The new done is the new perfect. Is that right?
Yeah. Done is the new perfect.
Done is the new perfect. And that plays really well with this, Emmy, because of the fact that, you know, like, especially if you're trying to get things done, if you're trying to sort of, part of that commitment is the feeling of accomplishment. You know, you want to sort of do something, and at the end of it, you want to have some sort of a reward, which is, I've accomplished that thing that I've been trying to learn for the past 2 years. You know what I mean? But you need to have things, you need to basically tick things as being done rather than just basically trying to sort of corner yourself in a lot of times. And these are the two extremes, right? So we're talking about two extremes here. We're talking about the extreme of the first one that we spoke about, which is, don't overwhelm yourself with a lot of reading, just stick to the mastermind. And the other extreme now is we got to the end, but now you just want to sort of like start producing stuff, as an example. If you're talking from a business point of view over here, don't wait until it's actually absolutely perfect before you start getting things out the door, just move, just keep moving, get things done, get things done.
Absolutely, 100%, man, 100%. Like it's a lot of times you, not a lot of times. I think every time, I would argue every single time, what is going to contribute the most to your success in something is getting that momentum going, because that's the hardest part in anything,
Oh,
in
absolutely.
weight loss,
Absolutely.
in training, muscle building, getting a business off the ground, anything like that. The absolute hardest part is that initial inertia. It's the hardest, the hardest time to push a car is when it's at a standstill. Once you push it and the wheels are turning, all you have to do is just apply a little bit of force to the back of the car to keep it rolling. The hardest part is that. So you just got to get things going. And and to a real life example that's happened just recently during this whole pandemic and everything was I started to manufacture gym equipment because there's been a massive shortage and a lot of people want to get their training done at home and there's been nothing. So even things on back order, a lot of gym supply companies are saying, 6 weeks waiting, but really they're just sort of say, even saying that to get people to hang on and just order. But 6 weeks becomes 7 weeks, then becomes 8 weeks. So I decided to just go out and get some equipment and start making our own equipment, Adonis Athletics strength equipment. And maybe a lot of people would have said, "Wait a minute, you don't have a proper workshop. Wait a minute, you don't have $5,000 machinery." It doesn't matter because it might take me longer to make an item because I don't have $5,000 machinery, but I can still make the item. So I went, got myself a welder, got myself a drop saw, got myself a drill press, went and bought some metal and some steel, and started making racks, started making benches, and lo and behold, orders started to come in. And off the back of that, now I'm going to hold that. That's going to be a permanent part of Adonis Athletics, a branch, a sister company, because I've realized that done is better than perfect. And as I continue, I'm going to continue to perfect the technique of making the equipment. I'm going to make the designs better. I'm going to make the finish better. I'm going to make heaps of everything across the board is going to be better. It's going to be the best, in fact. I promise you that. But it doesn't have to be the best right now. It needs to be good enough. It needs to be safe enough. It needs to get the job done. That's exactly what it's doing. So don't sit on the sidelines waiting and waiting and waiting. Just start pushing the car. Get those wheels moving so that you can keep going. You can get to the next petrol station and fill up the petrol. And then you can have perfect. Now, with that being said, onto the last part of the letter. He says, "Contented poverty is an honorable estate. Indeed, if it be contented, it is not poverty at all. It is not the man who has too little, but the man who craves more that is poor. What does it matter how much a man has laid up in his safe or in his warehouse, how large are his flocks, and how fat his dividends? If he covets his neighbor's property and reckons not his past gains, but his hopes of gains to come, do you ask what is the proper limit to wealth? It is first to have what is necessary, and second to have what is enough. Farewell." This particular paragraph seems to go on a slight tangent, but it's very very meaningful. So he says contented poverty is an honorable estate. So contented poverty means poverty that you're satisfied with, like you're happy, you're willing to accept. Basically, you're satisfied with, you're happy with that situation. And so that's why he says, if it be contented, so if you are actually happy with it, it's not poverty at all. And it's so true. If you're happy to live within certain means, and again, a lot of this stuff, sure, it can be literal, but also figurative in different ways. So if it be contented, it is not poverty. If you're happy with the lack, then it's not poverty. Now, this is not to say that you should be happy with falling short, because you shouldn't be. You should be striving to progress always. You should be striving to improve, striving to know more and expand and all that. But what he's talking about is perhaps things that you have no control over, and you have poverty in a sense, at least for now, within that thing. So if you're content with that state of poverty, that level of poverty in that particular field, that knowledge, or literally, then it's not poverty at all. It's not the man that has too little, but the man who craves more that is poor. I don't think that one needs any explaining. What does it matter how much a man has laid up in his safe or in his warehouse, how large his flocks and how fat his dividends? If he covets his neighbor's property, so if he's thinking about his neighbor's property and thinks not of his own past gains, but his hopes of gains to come, that's where you can sort of irritate yourself. That's where you can be your own greatest enemy, where you are thinking about what the next person has, how the next person is doing, rather than just thinking about yourself and what you've got right now, and what you've had in the past, and where you've come up to, and how much you've developed. That's the kind of thoughts that need to be running in your head. And obviously, he finishes with, "Do you ask what is the proper limit to wealth? It is first to have what is necessary," and that's what I was saying. It's not to say that having poverty is good. It's not good. You need to have what is necessary, and that's in every sense of the word. Success in your business, whether it's like, you know, your business, whether it's enough money that you need to live with, whether it's enough knowledge that you need to have to be successful within your field, and so on and so on. So you need to first have what is necessary, and then second, to have what is enough. Farewell. I think that one punctuates it pretty well and finishes it off good. Anything to add there, Chad?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit more than just the poverty side of things in this particular paragraph. And as you mentioned, like from a face value, yep, it's actually a really, really, really good quote, you know, like where... You know, like, to me personally, what is the definition of poverty? You know what I mean? Who is, like, who would you call poor and who would you call wealthy? And that's kind of like becomes very, very subjective, right? It's a very subjective question. But in regards to going back to this letter, I think he just brings this letter to a full circle. And it's kind of answering, or we've sort of answered this paragraph in our talk in the last while we were answering the last paragraph. So basically, the way this paragraph strikes me is that if you are a person, and I'll start with a bit of an analogy. Say you comparing yourself to your neighbor, right? And your neighbor has a better house than you, right? And I mean, your house is good and you're content with your house. But when you look at your neighbor's house, it's like, you know what? He's got a pool. I want a pool too. You know what? He's got a big tree in front of his house. I want a big tree in front of my house. And all of a sudden, it's that comparing yourself to your neighbor that will make you feel like you're not really up to standards anymore. And you feel like in poverty terms, you feel like you're poorer than your neighbor because your neighbor has something that you kind of like want as well. You know what I mean? So I'm looking at it from a different perspective here. So, but you do have the basics, right? You do have a house, you do have something that you live in, but you know what? You want that pool that your neighbor has. And I think this is what he's trying to look at. Like, don't worry about what your neighbor has. Just be content on what you've achieved. And if you start off this letter with, he started off with this letter with, you know, don't get too confused with a whole lot of stuff. And he's finishing it off of, you know what? Even if you are trying to compare yourself to someone who really knows about something better than you do, just don't worry about it. Just make sure that you've got the basics covered first, right? And this is kind of like if it was to sort of like dissect it a little bit more and try to get a little bit deeper with this. This is what strikes me. I could maybe be reading it a little bit wrong in this, but this is kind of like what I'm getting out of it. So, the compare yourself to others and what you envisage poverty to be. I think this is a good way to sort of end this letter. So, as a note, and to recap everything that has been said in this letter, and this is a really actually good letter, is really the whole thing is about the commitment, is about the don't worry about the quick results. Learn how to be on your, you know, learn how to be on your own, and appreciate your thoughts, appreciate your creativity, no matter what it is. Don't worry too much about the quick results, you know, just keep going forward. Do you want to niche, or do you want to be the jack of all trades? Maybe not just niching at just the one thing. Maybe have several things that could base, you know, like you could do a little bit of this and a little bit of that, and when you combine them together, it makes, you know, it gives you a unique way to do things. Exactly what you're doing now, coach. I mean, you're into the strength training. You've been a coach for quite some time now, but now, and you've niched it. People respect you highly and respect your opinion highly on what you do. But now you're sort of doing something else. Well, now you're building, you know, gym equipments. Fantastic. You know what I mean? It goes very well with what you're doing. Now, in face value, what's welding and fabrication has to do with training? Nothing really to a point, but you're learning how to do the second bit. You're learning how to weld. You're learning how to put things together. And all of a sudden, you're creating something that is based on strength training. So you're sort of making that unique network between two different sort of two different skills, and you're making a unique thing for you. And this is kind of like what strikes me with this. So you've built the basis. Now you're tipping your toes on other in other stuff, and you know, before you know it, the other stuff will be freaking fantastic. And all of a sudden, your brand will grow stronger because you're not only doing, you're not only writing, say for example, strength programs for people. You're actually providing other services as well. And to me, that's a really successful way of actually moving forward, and a stoic way to move forward, really. So, yeah, this is the second letter of Seneca, and this is what Amir and I basically think about it. And I hope that this breakdown has been cool for everybody.
Definitely. Thanks. Thanks for your thoughts, Chad. It was actually good. I like this. I like the way we went through it and did everything. But it doesn't really matter what I like. It matters what the people out there like. So, first of all, everybody listening, thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Let us know what you think. Subscribe to the podcast. Share the podcast. And this is going to be a weekly release. So. We're obviously testing it out. This is kind of like the pilot episode. So let us know what you think, because based on what you think of this pilot episode, we'll know how to shape things for the future episodes to come. With that, I think we'll leave it there. Until the next week.